Right now is a great time to be buying. If you can buy a deal that makes sense, because if the deal makes sense at rates today, then boy, oh boy, it'll make sense when rents, get pushed up, inflation kind of happens a bit. Naturally, you do a value add program and then rates are lower. That's the perfect storm for a good deal. So I do think there is light at the end of the tunnel. I think what we experienced from 2023 to this point now has been worse than what's to come coming up from, I guess, our ends of the spectrum.
Let's get ready to scale. Hey guys, welcome to yet another episode of Ready to Scale. I am your host, Jeanette Friedrich, Director of Investor Relations at Blue Lake Capital. Today, I am coming to you from the beautiful and warm Orange County. So a shout out to my new hood in California, which is North Tustin. The Blue Lake team has officially made the move and we are all now located in the LA MSA. Obviously, I went a little south, but I'm loving it and it's great. Hopefully, I'll finally get a tan. We'll see. But definitely a nice change from Boston. I have to say, I'm excited to have a plethora of Mexican food available to me. Being originally from Texas, I did not know that there's this great debate between basically Tex-Mex and Cali-Mex. So I'm trying to kind of learn how to adjust to Cali-Mex versus Tex-Mex. So if anybody has any suggestions of a restaurant I have to try, please be sure to let me know in the comments or even in the reviews, because when it comes to my food, I'm very serious about my Mexican food. So nonetheless, let's get down to business. Joining me today is Craig McGrother. Craig is the Director of Business Development at Lone Star Capital. Previously, he worked as a real estate agent with Hague Partners, Keller Williams, and Estero. He has a bachelor's degree in regional development from the University of Arizona. He's also a longstanding volunteer with Habitat for Humanity, which I thought was super cool and wanted to make sure I gave kudos to you for that. And he's coming to us today from New York. So Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. And let me just tell you this right now. Let's end the debate. California Mexican food is substantially better than Tex-Mex. I actually think Tex-Mex, I'm like very opinionated on this matter being from the Bay Area. I think Tex-Mex is garbage, frankly. So there's my hot take to start the day. I'm very passionate about that. I think Cali-Mex destroys. So we're going to embrace the debate to start right away.
Well, I did not know that you were versed in this. So now I am excited. So first of all, French fries do not belong in a burrito. I don't know what is going on with that.
I'm not going to argue with that one. Like, I'm not going to argue. I agree. I agree. It, yes, it's sacrilegious.
It's wrong. I've seen French fries. I've seen Cheetos. Like, burritos are sacred. You just don't mess with them. You leave them.
Well, that's fusion. That to me is fusion. Oh. That's not really true Mexican food, so I would concur with you on that one. I understand there's different strokes for different folks, different flavors out there, but to each their own. But that's not what I would be ordering to piggyback off that point.
My other big beef, which is funny because they say everything is bigger in Texas. In Texas, you get a burrito. It's just a small, normal size burrito. Like, it's just a little burrito. It's not a big deal. Here, I order a burrito and it's a meal for like 4 days. It's out of control. It's
yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. They take it seriously.
Well, very good. I'm glad to know that you can also dance in this ring because, I'm sorry, but for right now, I have to say that I think Tex-Mex is far better, but we'll see. I'm just starting to dip my toe into the Cali-Mex waters, so we'll see.
I will just leave on this thought and we'll table it there, but I do think whatever you grew up on, you're going to like more inherently. So, being from the Bay Area, I do think I have a natural inclination to enjoy Cali-Mex more juxtaposed to Tex-Mex, but different strokes for different folks.
Very true. Very true. All right. Well, Craig, let's get into it because I think that this is going to be a really interesting episode. So for starters, you actually started off as a real estate agent in single family residential sector. And now you've made a big jump over to private equity, doing business development for Lone Star Capital, focused on multifamily, raising capital. That's a big shift. So out of curiosity, what motivation drove that for, you to kind of jump over and hop into another part of the game?
Yeah, without a doubt. That's a great question. And that's not the first time, nor will it be the last time I will be asked that question. And that said, there's, in any way slice it, I wanted to be in the real estate business. So I kind of came out of the womb, funny enough, wanting to sell homes. I got to do that. I've sold, hundreds of homes in my tenure as being a residential agent. But what I've found is that you're a bit more of a mercenary for that fee. Of course you have, relationships that you cultivate and harvest, but you're in a very, very interesting cutthroat business where you kind of get cut down. You're treated a little bit more as a commodity, which is totally fine. At the end of the day, most businesses are simply a commodity. People want to do it for quicker, cheaper, more cost effective, totally get it. But the other issue I had with the business is that you're kind of on an island and there's not much of a team feel to it, unfortunately. And yeah, you have some peers and some confidants in the space, but by and large, you're typically speaking really isolated. And it's kind of a lonely game. As opposed to working with Lone Star Capital, you've got a vibrant team. We're all kind of building, something greater than ourselves and a bigger vision and a bigger goal that can impact and help more lives. Not just me selling one person's house, but, improving the property, which affects every tenant. If we're buying 150 plus unit building, well, that's, maybe 150 plus families. We are enriching our investors' lives, and then we're also doing well for ourselves. So there's a lot bigger of an ecosystem and impact you can have with working with the team I'm on currently, juxtaposed to just being, selling a single family home to one person at a time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It does make sense. I find a lot of fulfillment in being associated with multifamily, and I can definitely understand and appreciate that. Now, I am curious, given your background, you'll be able to shed a lot more color on this than I can understand because I've never been involved from the single family side or as a real estate agent. But, not long ago, I believe it was back in March, I know that the National Association of Realtors basically agreed to a settlement for an antitrust lawsuit. And, I know it impacts a fee structure or something like that, but I mean, I really don't know what's going on very much. And so I'm curious to hear from you, if you can explain to me and our listeners, what is the story here? What happened and what is the implication to the broader industry as a whole?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a great question. This is something I actually have been aware of for multiple years now. And also probably in the back of my mind, it contributed to me wanting to leave the space because there is just a general push to having the business go away from, the way it was today. And, I'm fine with change, but the amount of radical change that we're going to see in the residential space was certainly one of the linchpins and the springboards to me wanting to expedite my process to leave the single space quicker. But effectively, the crux of the matter is you have brokers who essentially will set up, a fee, and, they said that, it was charged a 6% fee, and, the buyer or the buyer's agent gets paid from the seller, right? And the commission that's pre-set and agreed upon the sale of the listing contract that the listing agent sets up with the seller. So essentially, there's a lawsuit saying that, hey, I was forced to pay 6% commission, to my understanding, and that, why am I, as the listing agent, and the seller, forced to pay the buyer anything when the buyer is ultimately doing everything they can to undercut me in my process and pay the least amount of money to the deal that I'm buying, right? So the seller is like, why am I paying someone to work against me here? And it's more common in Australia and other countries actually to have the structure where, there's basically a listing side and a buy side fee. So the listing side makes a little bit more typically, and the buy side makes a little bit less. So essentially, there's a lawsuit saying, you can't steer and block bus and making everything a 6% fee, 3-3. Well, there's a lot of misnomers there because most people are not paying 6%. And no one's holding a gun to someone's head, metaphorically speaking, saying, hey, you have to pay 6% here. It's negotiated like anything. There will always be someone that will do it for 4%, 2%, 1%. And the results may vary on that. But that's up to the consumer, the seller, to set that on the front end. So that's kind of misnomer number one. And as far as, where it's going to go, I believe, and this is a lot of gray areas, the seller may be able to technically pay a commission moving forward. But I think moving forward, the standard will be that the selling agent, the seller will pay the selling agent a fee, and the buyer agent will be compensated probably through the buyer, typically speaking. So I do think there's unfortunately going to be a lot of negative consequences that are unintended associated with this change. Number one is there's a lot of first-time home buyers out there, whether you're getting a VA loan, whether you're getting, just getting your foot in the door, putting, on an FHA loan or putting 5% down, you're not going to be able to pay for representation. You have to pay this person, 10 grand, 5 grand, 2%, 1%, 3% of the transaction there. So they're all of a sudden now going to get less representation and probably worse representation due to that, which is a downstream negative consequence. But on top of that there, a lot of people now will be pushed to work directly with the listing agent, right? Which is fine, but the listing agent has a fiduciary responsibility to the seller. So that will potentially open up a large can of worms of liabilities and a lot of unintended consequences that may, impact negatively the business. So it's kind of a scary time in many respects. If you're an agent, I'm very empathetic to that process. I didn't really see there to be a need there. So it's kind of unfortunate, I would say, in a lot of respects. I do think this will, shrink the amount of commissions being paid. But at the end of the day, you can buy a Bentley and you can buy a Toyota Camry. There's nothing wrong with either, but there are prices in the market for everything. If you want to hire, the best surgeon or the cheapest surgeon, that's up to you. I don't see why the government needs to step in here, but that's, classic government. So that's kind of my two cents right now. If you want to ask any follow-up questions, hopefully I explained that okay.
Yeah, no, you did. And it is interesting. I'm curious to see if it's going to have a ripple effect and start to impact how brokers are compensated, registered investment advisors. I mean, I'm just kind of curious how much further out it's going to spread across the industry. Any kind of, predictions on that?
Well, technically, I believe they said July is when the buyer agent commission will be either taken away or taken off the multiple listing service, the MLS, which is a real estate agent tool. So it'll be very interesting to see what's going on there. So I think that's effect number one. I just think that moving forward, buyers will do more of the legwork themselves to set things up. But, the thing to think about is if you are a buyer and you want to see 10 homes, now you have to coordinate 10 showings with the 10 listing agents. That's going to be very challenging to pull off because if someone's just going out here, I'm going to ask the question for the listing. Hey, why do you want to see it? Okay, how many houses are you seeing? Oh, you're seeing 10 today. I'm not just going to drive over there, waste my time to open up a door for you maybe not to buy it. So I think there's going to be a lot less service associated there, which will have a negative consequence.
Interesting, interesting. It also makes me question what the overall impact is going to be to the demand for housing, which is already challenged enough as it is. It seems like it's going to make it even more difficult for people to become
Yeah,
homeowners.
I think that the demand will not change, but I think the barrier of entry into getting in, and for people who need representation most, which are people that are probably putting less than $100,000 down, are the ones who need agents the most. And I think they're going to have be hit the hardest with the negative impacts. If you're really wealthy, money's not an object to pay a good agent a good fee. You're going to have the best of the best, whether it be lawyers, doctors, so on and so forth. But it's truly the more middle class and people that are just in the lowest end of things are going to get hurt the most, in my opinion, which is I think going to be a negative consequence and one of the biggest sad points here. But time will tell. Markets are efficient and fluid, and there will be someone here who will make more money from this process. So it'll be interesting to see. I have a lot of friends in the business, naturally, from my tenure there that are happy and also sad, depending upon who you ask.
Interesting, interesting. Well, we will see how it plays out, but thank you for definitely shedding some good color on that. All right. So
Absolutely.
next, we're going to get into Texas, multifamily, politics, all kinds of stuff. But before we do, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Ready to Scale is brought to you by Blue Lake Capital, where we hunt down the best multifamily investment opportunities that we can find and invite investors to join in with us. We target Class B value-add multifamily properties across the Sun Belt. Our CEO, Ellie Perlman, invests a substantial amount of capital into every deal. This means our interests are aligned with yours. If you're an accredited investor looking to expand your portfolio and diversify sponsors, be sure to visit us at bluelake-capital.com. Blue Lake Capital, be bold, be extraordinary, and keep moving forward.
All right, so Craig, I am very curious about this. Basically, I want to know where your investors are coming from. So you're in New York, originally from the Bay Area, as we learned earlier. I'm originally from Texas, and I know that Texans have some very strong opinions. So I'm just curious how that crossover works when you're calling, say, potential Texas investors from New York. Do you get any blowback?
Absolutely not, to be honest with you. They're investing for numbers and whatnot. And we are coastal and in our roots. So Kent and Rob are the co-founders of the firm. Rob, myself, and Dasha and Brad, who's basically half the firm, are from the Bay Area. And then the other half are from New York and whatnot. And from a blowback perspective, we're not experiencing any. It's actually more people that are leaving markets where essentially landlord tenants rules. It changed one person on one side of the equation, and it's the owner. So the owner kind of gets screwed, and then the tenant gets all the power and leverage. So one of our top investors who invested over $30 million through their family office to our firm kind of explained it best. He's like, I don't want to play in a world and in a state where the rules change on me, but not the tenant. So there's no balance anymore. So people actually love Texas because they're flocking to a market that's more free in that respect, where it's landlord friendly, law and order is in effect. There's no squatters there. If, you know, a tenant's not paying, it's 30-day notice and the sheriff comes and kicks them out. So it's actually more beneficial than negative. I think a lot of people are kind of beaten up and feel very frustrated by the lack of laws in, you know, some of the states we want to live in, but probably not want to invest in. So that would be my retort to that comment there.
Well, 100%. I'm super pro Texas. There's many, many strong markets in Texas. Our portfolio also encompasses some properties in Texas as well. So I agree with you all day long. Texas is a very strong market. But of course, you know, as you said earlier, different strokes for different folks. So, you know, one of the things that I have, and it doesn't happen very often, but I have been surprised to be encountering it more lately as we're getting close to, you know, a potential administration change, is the play and the influence that politics actually sometimes have on people's investment decisions. So, you know, I didn't used to hear it hardly ever, but I'm starting to hear it just a little bit more now. And being that Texas, you know, is considered, you know, such a predominantly red state, I'm curious to see at all if you have been encountering, you know, investors that are basing their investment decisions, not just off the numbers, but also off the politics, especially given that, you know, Texas has, you know, definitely made some waves in the news for some pretty extreme decisions.
Yeah, well, if your investors are pushing back, then we have the quite opposite end of the spectrum of investors. Our investors say the redder the state, the better. So they're looking around at what's going on and they're very upset with how their historical investments have been. So it is the redder the better is kind of how they look at it. So that would be my answer to that.
Interesting. Interesting. I've gotten a mixed reaction. So, you know, some people are more focused on, you know, what they would consider to an extent impact investing. And even though they are interested, obviously, in profits, you know, there's still some people are still concerned about, you know, tenants' rights and kind of the balance between that. You know, I won't get deep into the politics, you know, of abortion rights and things along those lines. But, you know, some people do speak with their investment dollars and, you know, they have statements that they want to make clear. So it's just interesting, you know, kind of to see what you see on your end, since I get
yeah,
to see
well,
reaction.
I would actually say, you know, not to be argumentative here, but just to be devil's advocate, I mean, people are leaving dollars in droves, and the net migration to Florida, Texas, and Tennessee, which are as basically some of the red hubs right now, are pretty monumental. Similarly, the areas with most distress are in San Francisco, which is as blue can get, and those deals are massively underwater. So maybe it's an emotional thing, but if you look at any big institutional private equity group and whatnot, they're not allocating any dollars to markets where there's any rent control. They're going all in on red states. So maybe a couple of retail investors that we see here and there, but I think when you get the name Lone Star Capital, they kind of know what they're getting themselves into. So maybe they weed themselves out of that, as opposed to a more nondescript, I guess, name you could say, which is a great name, which was your firm's name, of course, but it's a little bit different of a profile.
Yeah, no, that's a solid point. Solid point. And, you know, the truth is, I mean, much like you guys, we are focused on some of the same criteria. So, you know, we absolutely are looking for landlord-friendly states. No one's going to put up with, you know, rent control that you see in New York or here in California, where you can have, you know, squatters for like, what, 9 months or a year or even longer. I mean, it's crazy. It's insane. It blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, you can't sell property without going on there, or you have to buy someone out and they kind of can hold you hostage there. But going to impact investing, we're actually very passionate about that. So Lone Star Capital buys three types of deals. We buy market rate opportunities, which is our good basis plays, which is like for one who wants to kind of think about that, to digest it. If we can buy a deal with a 20 to a 30% discount on purchase price, depending on the information that we kind of have internally in the markets that we're in, which is Houston, Dallas, and San Antonio, we'll buy an opportunity like that. We'll buy a value-add play, or we'll buy a affordable play where we, you know, give up affordability to about half the units. And, you know, we rent control them there. And then we get in exchange a massive tax abatement, either partial or all tax abatements there, which help, you know, the workforce housing, which is really the backbone of the country. And more people than not, you know, don't live in beautiful mansions, Laguna Beach or Newport Beach or, you know, Manhattan penthouses, right? Most people live in apartment complexes. So they, we kind of provide them preserved affordability. We provide them, you know, upgraded, you know, units because that's part of the exchange. You know, their rent's not going to go up in their face if there's crazy inflation. And then similarly, you know, we get a benefit from an investing side. So it's a public-private benefit and merge where all parties win.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And actually, it's a good segue into where I was going to go next, which is, you know, the basically investor sentiment and the climate for capital raising right now. You know, I know for sure that there's a lot of investors that are eager and expecting, you know, these incredibly heavily discounted deals to start hitting the market. And, you know, there's been some, you know, that our team has seen, our acquisition team has seen, but they refer to them as being incredibly hairy, meaning that there's like a lot going on with those deals. And that's why you don't want those deals. You know, they may be heavily discounted, but the complexity behind turning them around, you know, is incredibly challenging and it just doesn't make sense. So I'm just curious to know, you know, how would you describe the capital raising environment right now? What are some challenges that you've run into, and what are some strategies that you've actually implemented to help offset that?
Yeah, well, I think that one of the $2 million questions today are the debt and equity side, which every deal is comprised of those two sides, debt and equity, right? So from an equity raising side, the best time to raise money is when you don't need the money and prime the pump. So for the last, you know, really, we're always looking for equity. Equity, as you know, on the capital raising side is a black hole. It's infinite, but it's also, there's a million people to chase and you just don't know what to do and, you know, who may be, you know, worth investing in and who's just blowing smoke and will never mess a dollar through, right? So deciphering the two is a very, very important skill set and trait that one needs to acquire if they're in the capital raising side, right? But pertaining to, you know, things that we've been doing, we want to fish where the fish are, right? And one way we kind of get to the fish in the best pond is by going to conferences and by priming the pump, by sending out email blasts through our 15,000 person database of, you know, investors, capital allocators, everything else in between, saying, hey, you know, are you looking to learn more about, you know, partnering with us? Are you interested in working on a deal with us, whatever it may be, putting quality messaging out there to see who is, you know, hot and ready to go, because people need to put dollars out. People have tax liabilities and burdens, you know, need to deploy capital to hit their annual goals and are market agnostic. If no market's humming, they'll invest. If the market's sideways, they'll invest. If the market is going down, they're going to invest. So we want to find the right people that are there. But going to conferences has been really helpful to, you know, meet with capital allocated groups, whether it be JV, you know, institutional equity groups, whether it be, you know, retail investors, you know, folks who will invest somewhere between $50,000 to $200,000 in a deal, finding those people and then really nurturing the people that we have in our system has kind of been a big point of our focus. So really just giving quality servicing. And fortunately, we've had more of a deal flow restraint as opposed to an equity raising restraint. And I think a lot of that is due to the fact that we don't have any distress in our portfolio. So if you have portfolio-wide distress, you're gonna be really more worried about the rearview mirror and the legacy of your deals currently juxtaposed to seeing forward in the future. And, you know, when you're the one of maybe three sponsors that someone's working with that's actually distributing monthly returns like you promised and guaranteed, or I should say that we suggested and projected in our pro forma and rent rolls because the G word doesn't exists in real estate, guaranteed that is. If you are actually the one that is contributing and are bringing capital on the monthly basis, then they're going to work with you. So we're fortunate to have been delivered on our word very well from the projections, and we're navigating it well. So we're really on a deal flow constraint, which goes to the other side of the component, which I mentioned, debt and equity, the debt side. You know, it's basically impossible to make a deal pencil and work if treasuries are going up like they've been going up. You know, right now, you know, if you've got a 190 lender spread and you pull up what the 5-year treasury is, if you want to take a 5-year note out, which we find to be the sweet spot right now, we're talking about a 6.58 debt net term, which is crazy. You can't make a deal pencil with numbers like that. So something's got to give. Pricing's got to change, or debt's got to go down. And we're kind of in this middle flux right now where we don't know what's going on. You know, we thought the rate high was back there before. We thought that it was going to cut. Well, now everything we told, we just don't know. So uncertainty stifles any transactions and velocity. And that's kind of what we're in the middle of right now. And I think a lot of deals that we didn't get will come back around to us, which is good because we'd rather be the second husband on those opportunities.
Yeah, no, very true. I can definitely agree with you. It's a very strange and interesting time in real estate is really the best way I can describe it because there are so many different factors impacting the market right now. Everything from geopolitics to the upcoming administration change to obviously what's going on with, the feds and interest rates. We've got inflation that is as sticky as all get-go, as they say in Texas. There's just a lot of challenges in the market right now, and it'll be interesting to see, kind of how things will start to shake out. Do you personally, just out of curiosity, think that the feds are actually going to lower interest rates this year anymore? I know people are starting to question, is that really even going to happen at all?
I think they are handicapped and have their hands tied due to the fact that every election year, historically speaking, rates have gotten cut. So I do think, one way or another, it doesn't matter if there's a Republican or a Democrat in office. This is an apolitical take. Rates always get cut at that point. So I do think we will likely see a rate cut. I don't know if it's going to be three, and a rate cut is deemed a 25 basis point cut. So, but a quarter won't really change that much there. So I do think we will see a cut, but you made a very good point there that I just want to kind of iron out more, which is the uncertainty. And it's not just uncertainty on one front. It's not like, oh, well, we have an election, which always kind of makes things crazy, right? We've got rampant inflation. We've got an election. We've got a terrible situation going on in, the Middle East, of course, which is just, really scary. If we're on the brink of a war, that's obviously not very good. There's a lot of tensions there. And then we've got rates being really high. And actually, I had a conversation with the founder of the firm this morning. This is April 15th or April 16th, excuse me. So if this is delayed a little bit, then you can look at that, take the take as it is. But just to time date this conversation and when that is, it was April of 2007 was the last time the 5-year treasury was this high. And typically speaking, it is a 24-month process. Or 23-month process for when a recession could technically start following the first rate hike, which would put us in July of 2024. So that is interesting stats. So take that for what it is. I do think that right now is a great time to be buying if you can buy a deal that makes sense. Because if the deal makes sense at rates today, then boy, oh boy, it'll make sense when rents, get pushed up, inflation kind of happens a bit. Naturally, you do a value add program and then rates are lower. That's the perfect storm for a good deal. So I do think there is light at the end of the tunnel. I think what we experienced from 2023 to this point now has been worse than what's to come coming up from, I guess, our ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, very interesting. Leading into the potential discussions of a recession, which for a while there was a lot of buzz around that, and then it kind of died down as people grew more confident and comfortable that the feds were going to surely cut rates. And it's interesting. I almost wonder if at a certain point we're going to look back and realize that we actually are already in a recession.
Yes,
Very possible.
that's a really good take. And the way I look around is I'm fortunate that I'm in a situation where I have a really nice job. I can afford my mortgage. It's all good. But a lot of people are really stretched for their dollars right now. It's really, really concerning. And I think we can all kind of look around. It's like, wait, this costs this much? Like, this doesn't feel like I'm getting that dollar's worth of value, which is really concerning, right? So, and I don't know if that's here to stay. And the other crux of the matter as well is the amount of money that was printed before with, the end with COVID, with Trump in office, and then Biden as well with some of the COVID relief stuff, which, and then the anti-inflation bill, which inherently is oxy and paradoxical because you can't print money to change inflation. That actually quite literally makes the process worse. But with that said, it's really challenging that we have all these items going on right now. And I don't know if that's here to change, but where it will stick is assets. So this is just a great PSA to those. Hey, the way you beat inflation is by having your money be in the market, holding it cash devalues your dollar. So put that money to work.
Yep, all day long. Absolutely agree. Well, fantastic way to kind of wrap this part up. Before we, conclude, I do want to take you through what we call the lightning round questions so we can
Fire
end on
away.
a little bit of a lighter note. Yeah,
Okay.
so basically these are five questions that I ask all of the guests that come on the show. So you ready?
I'm born.
All right. So what is something that you do for fun?
I love to play pickleball. It's like my new found hobby. I love it. It is going to age very well for my non-athletic career moving forward. So pickleball.
Nice. I actually have not even tried it, so I'll have to add it to my bucket list, but very cool. All right. Now, what is something interesting about you that most people don't know?
Kind of crazy, but in high school, I lost 110 pounds in 8 months. So a little fun fact there. Those who know me know that's true. Despite the camera angle here, I'm actually 6'3". So people think I'm a dwarf when I meet them and then online, and then I meet them in person. They're, oh, you're actually pretty tall. So I lost 110 pounds though when I was 6'2" at the time. I think I grew an inch since then, but a little known fact, I lost 110 pounds in 8 months. So kind of crazy.
Wow, and I assume that that was intentional and something that you considered to be
Correct.
positive. Okay.
Yeah, correct. Very positive. Yeah, one should not be as heavy as it was at that point. Yeah, so.
Well, good for you. Good for you. That is not
Yeah.
easy at all. All right.
No.
So now let's talk about books. You know, you definitely are a sharp guy, and you, I'm sure, enjoy, you know, reading up on different types of investment strategies and all kinds of things. So what book would you recommend investors should definitely include in their library?
This is very basic, but I don't think you need to get outside of the basics. They're basics for a reason and they're essentials, right? Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad Poor Dad, is I think the most influential and best book one should have. It's reshaped the way I'm going to play with my capital here coming up, and I fully think everyone should read that, reread that. I think it's an annual read or listen, however you like to consume your books.
Yep, you were not the first, and I'm sure you will not be the last to say that. So
Yeah.
that's added to the list for sure. Now, I definitely know that you can appreciate this just based upon our conversation. You know, here at Blue Lake, one of the things that we really try to focus on and encourage our investors to do is to build and live extraordinary lives. Yes, we love money. Yes, we love returns, but really it's just a resource, you know, to position us to be able to, you know, focus on the things that matter most to us. So, what is your advice to someone that is striving to build and live an extraordinary life?
Yeah, I think that, and that's a great question. One thing that's really important is to find out that money is not going to make you happy. It's people and experiences. So make sure that you're investing in your relationships and your people because, oh, wow, you died with $10 million in your account that's just sitting there. You can look at it. Well, who cares? But what if you use your dollars for, enriching other people's lives, to give back, to, have time freedom, to travel to places you wanted to go, to experience different cultures, to broaden your horizons. So I think that, investing in your relationships and in travel are the two most key things to do to live your best life.
Nice, very nice. All right, I agree. I always say it's the people in your life that make it what it is, and it's very true.
Yeah. Who, not how.
Definitely. Yes, absolutely. All right, and then last but not least, Craig, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they reach out?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on your platform. I hope the audience is okay with the conservative takes on the investment thesis at Lone Star Capital. Don't shoot me. I'm not the one who founded the firm, but it just happens to be how we're able to create shareholder value, as they say. But if you'd like to reach out to me, I'm very active on LinkedIn. Rob Beardsley, the co-founder of the firm, and myself have a weekly podcast. You can find him at Rob Beardsley on YouTube. All of our stuff will come up there. So please feel free to give that a listen. And if you want to go to our website to learn a bit more, it's lscre.com. And if you want to email me personally, it's craig@lscre.com.
All right, perfect. And we'll be sure to include those details in the show notes as well. So thank you very much, Craig. Very enlightening, fun, fast conversation, but I really enjoyed it. I hope for those of you that invested your time with us today, you found the show valuable. Please don't forget to like, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Leave us some reviews, leave us some comments, let us know what you're thinking about, and we'll be sure to try to make sure that we mix it into the next show. Thanks so much for your time. In the meantime, be bold, be strong, and keep moving forward.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.